I'm Abigail Galvan. Welcome to EWTN Pro-Life Weekly.
As the old adage says, simply because we can do, should we do?
The controversial medical practice of transplanting a uterus, where the science is today, and the ethical concerns.
It's such a testament when our schools embrace these kids, the most marginalized, the most forgotten, the most vulnerable. And when we embrace them, we really take on that issue, saying, yes, we believe in the sanctity of life.
Inclusion in Catholic schools, how one foundation is helping students with special needs get a Catholic education. And on the path towards sainthood, we introduce you to who could be the next patron saint of the pro-life movement. A co-founder of a global breastfeeding support group, La Leche League, is blasting the organization for allowing trans-identifying males to partake in support groups. 94-year-old Marian Thompson resigned from her position on the organization's board, writing a letter to leadership saying, "This shift from following the norms of nature, which is the core of mothering through breastfeeding, to indulging the fantasies of adults, is destroying our organization." LGBT advocates had argued that men who believe they are women are capable of breastfeeding babies by taking synthetic hormones. Thompson warned La Leche League that no scientific studies have been done on the effect male lactation could have on a baby. She says she is open to returning to the organization if it returns to its original mission and purpose.
"We proclaim it in and out of season. We must insist on the dignity of the human person from womb to tomb, to see Christ in those who are most in need, to defend and lift up the poor."
The United States Conference of Catholic Bishops has wrapped up their annual fall plenary assembly in Baltimore. Several life issues were front and center, including immigration and abortion. Archbishop Timothy Broglio, the president of the U.S. Conference of Catholic Bishops, reaffirmed the church's teaching on the dignity of life and their work to promote the gospel to all Americans and American leaders. As President-elect Trump readies to take office with promises to federally fund in vitro fertilization and Vice President-elect J.D. Vance's support for the availability of the abortion pill, bishops say they will wait to see what the incoming administration does before reacting to campaign promises. This week, Italy's new law criminalizing so-called surrogacy tourism took effect. Surrogacy was outlawed inside Italy in 2004, but many Italians travel internationally to find a woman to bear their child. Italy broadened its legislation on surrogacy, declaring surrogacy a universal crime for Italians to engage in its practice. For those who do break the law, penalties range from 3 months to 2 years in prison and fines of up to 1 million euro. Pope Francis has called surrogacy deplorable. The Catholic Church opposes surrogacy since it's a violation of natural law and severs the relationship between husband and wife, as a third party is usually introduced through the use of in vitro fertilization.
One other dimension that really needs to be mentioned is stressed by Pope Francis, and that is the grave way that surrogacy violates the dignity of the human person. It violates the dignity of the mother, who essentially is turning herself into a transactional commodity, somebody who is selling herself, especially over a 9-month period with what are often draconian contracts. And then we have the grave violation of the dignity of the unborn child, who is entitled to be raised by parents who love him or her, who actually are the parents of this child.
While surrogacy has skyrocketed across the globe as a $14 billion industry, a fairly new practice of uterus transplantation is slowly becoming more common. The first successful uterus transplant was performed in 2012. The first child born of a uterus transplant occurred in Sweden in 2014. Since then, dozens of babies have been born through uterus transplants. Dr. Andrew Kubik, research fellow of bioethics and medical conscience at the Religious Freedom Institute and personal consultations ethicist at the National Catholics Bioethics Center, has written a book on the moral implications of these transplants. Transplanting the Womb, a Catholic Bioethical Analysis, dives into the ethical ramifications of this kind of science. It's on sale now at bookstores. Andrew, can you walk us through your research and what you learned about this emergent technology?
Absolutely. So this was a topic that I was very unfamiliar with when it was first presented to me by a friend, mentor, and at the time my dissertation director, Father Nicanor Ostriaco. Over the course of several years, I dove pretty deep into the research, both the medical and scientific literature, as well as the ethical literature. And what I found was a procedure that is performed by physician scientists who no doubt have incredible ingenuity, technical expertise and skills, but nevertheless a procedure that required a very forceful, very strong ethical analysis, as with any emergent technology. And so, as the old adage says, simply because we can do, should we do? And that is what I did over the course of several years doing the research for my dissertation and then the research necessary to update that dissertation to the book. With regard to what I also had the opportunity to do, which was really a blessing, studying uterine transplants and the individuals who would seek it out, I had the opportunity to pray daily for the men and women who heroically carry the cross of infertility. And not only to pray for them and their carrying of that cross, but also pray for physician scientists and for others who work in the field to respond to that infertility, hopefully in ways that are moral, for example, restorative reproductive health care, ways that will actually resolve infertility rather than work around it.
And where in the U.S. would you say this procedure is done most often, and who would you say are the recipients and donors?
So as you mentioned in the intro, Sweden is known to have performed the first successful, meaning that it concluded with a live birth transplant. Actually, there were 9 uteri transplanted, 7 were considered successful, and I just read that all in all, 6 children have been born from those 7 uteri. But it's actually here in the United States that we find the world leader, and that would be Baylor University Medical Center. Baylor University Medical Center is the first to move from clinical trials to an actual program at their campus in Texas. They were the first to deliver a baby in the U.S. From a transplanted womb. They were the first to deliver babies from both living and deceased uteri. And they were the first to deliver 2 babies from the same transplanted womb. And recent reports suggest that they have completed over 33 transplants and have delivered over 22 babies. Regarding what are the criteria to be a donor and a recipient, we'll start with the recipient. They would have uterine factor infertility that can either be congenital, which means they were born without a uterus or they have a malformed uterus, or they have acquired uterine factor infertility, which means they had a hysterectomy performed. They have to be cancer-free for 5 years, of childbearing age, and generally healthy. To be a donor, they're more specific with the age. Usually it's a woman between the ages of 30 and 50. They have to also be cancer-free for 5 years, and they have to be generally healthy.
Now, from a Catholic ethical perspective, are uterus transplants permissible? Why or why not?
Considering the entirety of the uterus transplantation process, the first part of it, a required part, is in vitro fertilization. Every potential candidate for a uterine transplant must undergo IVF and have several embryos frozen. IVF, the Catholic Church has taught that IVF is an immoral act. Additionally, there are moral concerns. While not required for the uterine transplant process, it could occur, and that is if a living donor were to donate her uterus before she completed menopause, that would be a sterilizing act. There's also the concern that there could be twinning or multiple embryos implant. And in that case, a selective reduction could be ordered, which would be a direct abortion on at least one, possibly more human embryos. There are prudential concerns regarding the donor, the recipient, and the children that could be born from these transplanted wombs. All in all, This is a process that ought not to be done as it exists now, especially in light of the readily available, safe, and effective alternative of adoption.
Thank you, Andrew, for your research and for being with us today. Dr. Kubik's book called Transplanting the Womb, a Catholic Bioethical Analysis, is available right now from multiple vendors, including the Catholic University of America Press, from Amazon and Barnes & Noble. Pro-Life in the Classroom, a nonprofit, is working to meet the rising number of families looking for an inclusive Catholic education for their children with special needs. For decades, those with disabilities were segregated or ignored by the education system. It wasn't until 1975 that the All Handicapped Children Act passed, which required public schools to provide special education services. The National Center for Education Statistics reports that for the 2022 to 2023 school year, about 15% of students in public school received some kind of special needs support. In 2023, the National Catholic Educational Association reported about 8% of children who attend Catholic schools have a disability. Catholic education for those with disabilities still falls short with less resources available than public education systems. A nonprofit organization called the FIRE Foundation is working to fix that in schools across the country. Take a look.
If the life of an unborn child with Down syndrome is worth saving, then that soul is also worth feeding and guiding and forming deeply in a love for Jesus Christ. And where better to do that than in a Catholic school?
What does it mean to be pro-life between conception and natural death? One organization is igniting the pro-life movement during life. Francis Mayer, the father of a child with Down syndrome and a senior fellow at the Ethics and Public Policy Center, spoke about the importance of an inclusive Catholic education at the annual FIRE Foundation Gala in Denver.
Our whole mission is to champion students with disabilities and get them into our Catholic schools. And we do that through providing educational resources, fundraising efforts, but ultimately providing a whole culture of belonging. Because at the end of the day, that's really what this is about.
The FIRE Foundation, or the Foundation for Inclusive Religious Education, equips schools and dioceses across the nation with resources to provide Catholic education to children with special needs, the goal being to promote the participation of peers with disabilities in ways that are the same as their non-disabled peers.
I think there's nothing more heartbreaking than when you see the families that have to break up their children so that they can get an education because the Catholic school isn't available, or maybe they're fearful of allowing a student with a disability to come in there.
Carrie Rowe founded FIRE Dallas in response to a problem she herself, among many other parents with special needs children, found themselves facing. Catholic schools lack the resources for their child. This is why FIRE Dallas, along with 9 other affiliates nationwide, provides grants to Catholic schools for special education resources, technology, and training for teachers in order to better receive those families in search of a Catholic education for their special needs child.
Since the arrival of the FIRE Foundation is the ability for our schools to open their doors and accept students with special needs.
Originally started in Kansas City, Missouri in 1996, the organization has operated in 15 schools and helped more than 800 children, those with disabilities and those without.
I think the best kept secret is that inclusion benefits all students academically, spiritually, and socially.
Francesca Pellegrino, founder and president of the Catholic Coalition for Special Education in Maryland, says it is more than just a special needs child that benefits from an inclusive format.
There is a growing body of research that shows when children with and without disabilities are educated together, everybody does better.
In his 2024 apostolic journey to Timor-Leste, Pope Francis echoed this point.
Give us the testimony of letting themselves be cared for, because they teach us how we should let ourselves be cared for by God. They are our teachers.
Lisa Froelich, a teacher at a FIRE affiliate school in Iowa, says she learns from her students every day.
They just bring so many joys no matter what. The laughter that we do share is hysterical. You know, it's just, we laugh about everything. We try to find something funny in everything. The relationships that you build with them, the relationships that you see other students build with your special needs students. It's so rewarding. It's worth the challenges.
And it's not just teachers who are being taught. It's priests too. Father Nathan Goble, chaplain of the Fire Denver Board, has been working with families and priests involved in this mission since he was a seminarian.
And for me, like as a member of the church, what I'm able to do is actually say, this person, although they have a need, they're going to teach you about your need.
He not only emphasized the importance of community among parents with special needs children within the church, but also recognized his role as a shepherd in fostering the unique community.
Because what I've realized in coming to serve this community is how much I receive from caring for them, as well as for them caring for me.
Foundations like FIRE that equips those with special needs with the spiritual and academic formation they need reaffirm what it is to be pro-life and pro-family by respecting the dignity of all of God's children and working to keep families united. As affiliates are added each year, the FIRE Foundation hopes to continue growing across the country, since the formation they provide isn't just one-sided.
Children with disabilities can bring us so many blessings that we just can't even imagine. I mean, my son has taught me so much more than I could ever have taught him.
It's inspiring work. I recently had the opportunity to speak with the executive director of the FIRE Foundation in Denver to learn a little more about the organization's financial needs and how they work to meet the needs of children. Kyle, we just heard about the FIRE Foundations around the nation. Can you tell us more about the specific services FIRE provides in schools? For example, some children with disabilities may need an in-classroom aid. Does FIRE provide that?
Yes, it's a great question. You know, our work is all about partnering with Catholic schools in the diocese we serve to deliver grants that support either staff salaries for a paraprofessional, which would be an aide in a classroom, a special education teacher who might be doing some more advanced curriculum modification. We provide funds for professional development for teachers to get the training they need. And the third category is adaptive technology and equipment that might be needed to help make certain accommodations for different students with different learning needs.
That sounds very comprehensive. Now, teachers in these Catholic schools may not have the necessary training and might even be fearful of the challenges special education presents. Can you tell us more about the professional development you provide to teachers?
We partner with the schools and understand that there's a vast diversity in our Catholic schools in terms of their needs and individual experience. And so we really partner with each school to say, where are you in this journey of serving students with disabilities? And what type of training are you looking for? Could be behavior or regulation training for students that are having trouble being regulating themselves in the classroom. It could be specific reading or math language skill training. Perhaps it's a training on a specific disability or need like dyslexia, autism spectrum disorder, Down syndrome, etc. So we really partner with the school to learn what is it that you're in need of, where are the holes, and how can we help fill those gaps.
I love that tailored approach. And what about the students? Can you tell us what developments you see in their lives, spiritually or academically?
Yeah, there's 40 years of research that shows us when students with disabilities learn alongside typically developing peers that everyone benefits. We see test scores go up, especially in English and language skills. Oftentimes math scores go up or stay the same. So great academic benefits. And that's because teachers learn to meet each and every student exactly where they are in their educational journey, regardless of a diagnosis or not, and really help to meet them where they are and help them succeed. We see a lot of spiritual benefits as well because we finally see the body of Christ in its fullness coming together in a Catholic school. We get to see every part and every child that God has created, getting to learn alongside each other, skills of empathy, kindness, respect, things that you can't teach in a book, but students learn through companionship and friendship together, and social emotional as well. Children with disabilities having the ability to learn alongside their typically developing peers allows them to get social benefits and exposure that they may not get in a more exclusionary or segregated environment.
That sounds incredible. And can you speak to the success rates of kids heading to high school, college, or obtaining jobs?
Absolutely. Yeah, there's a lot of wonderful high schools across the country, Catholic high schools that are including children with disabilities as well. We're very happy here in Denver to have our first high school partner welcoming children with significant needs into their school. And we know that that is more likely to ensure job placement for the long term when students with disabilities are included in environments alongside typical peers. They're more likely to be able to obtain and maintain jobs long term. There's also a lot of great inclusive college programs across the country that are beginning as well to say, how can we welcome and open our doors to provide a 2-3-4 year program for students to gain more long term skills and be able to obtain a job that's not just job placement for the sake of job placement, but true fulfillment. An individual with a disability has dreams just like you and me. And to be able to ask that young person, what do you want to do with your life? What is your dream job? And how can we help you to gain the skills necessary to obtain that is really exciting. And it's key for longevity and happiness for all people.
That's incredible. Now, FIRE is a nonprofit organization. How does FIRE gain the funding it needs to provide grants for children with special needs?
It's 365 days of fundraising, grant writing, event planning, meeting with donors. We do everything we can to ensure that if an individual's heart is called to make a gift, that we have lots of different ways for them to be able to make that contribution. And it's through that generosity that we're able to do all the things that I've been talking about here, partner with schools, with dioceses, bishops, superintendents, to be able to ensure that we know that this is hard work, but we can do hard things. We can do difficult things. And it's our calling as Catholics to embrace every person. And so that generosity of our donors through our fundraising is how it's possible. It's the only way we can accomplish these goals.
I know a little bit about fundraising myself, so that's incredible. What does the future look like for the FIRE Foundation and Denver nationwide?
Here in Denver, we're celebrating 3 years of operation here and working with 14 schools in our archdiocese. And we know that there's more schools, more children, more teachers, more individuals that need our support and help. And so we're looking forward to growing where we can, reaching more folks. FIRE Foundations across the country are all in their each sort of specific phase of their journey, but looking to help to get into more schools. There's so many families that are turned away, unfortunately, from Catholic education. And we just want to make sure that we can encourage schools and give them the resources that they need to be able to joyfully and successfully say yes to every family.
And Kyle, any closing thoughts or anything else you'd like to share?
Yeah, I mean, you know, there's a lot of important missions in our church, but especially in reflecting on our role as a pro-life church and a pro-life people. I can't think of anything greater that we could provide to a family that said yes to life, to a life that God has brought into this world, than to ensure that every child has the opportunity to access the rich gifts and opportunities that the church provides. As a convert who converted after 13 years of Catholic education, I 100% believe that Catholic education is the greatest gift we can give to children. And I'm just grateful that to be a part of a mission that ensures every child has that opportunity.
Well, Kyle, thank you for your yes. Kyle Van Frank of the FIRE Foundation of Denver, thank you.
Thank you.
To learn more about the FIRE Foundation and find a FIRE affiliate near you, visit firefoundation.org. Coming up, the pro-life movement needs all the prayers it can get in this secular world. When we return, we introduce you to a new blessed. You can ask for the intercession for the pro-life movement, and he may become a new patron saint for the cause. We are incredibly blessed to have so many saints in the Catholic Church. The pro-life movement has several pro-life patron saints, including Our Lady of Guadalupe, St. Maximilian Kolbe, and St. Gerard Mahaya, to name a few. Well, one more may be added to the ranks. We take a look at Blessed Moises Lira of Mexico. Well-known pro-life intercessors include saints like Gianna Mola, Mother Teresa, or Our Lady of Guadalupe. But many probably haven't heard of this new pro-life patron, Blessed Moises Lira Serafin.
One of the characteristics of the new Blessed Moises Lira Serafin was precisely this: to reproduce in the same way the image of Christ the Son, meek and humble, and to propose this face of Jesus also for the imitation of his spiritual daughters, the missionaries of charity of Mary Immaculate.
Father Moises Lira Serafin was beatified by the Pope's representative on September 14th of this year at the Shrine of Our Lady of Guadalupe in Mexico, a fitting place for a future pro-life saint. Born in a small town in Mexico, Moises Lira Serafin dreamed of becoming a priest. With the death of his mother as a child and a working father, he was often in the care of the local priests. He took his final vows at the age of 29, entering into the Missionaries of the Holy Spirit in 1922. Known for his childlike spirit and simplicity, he later founded the Missionaries of Charity of Mary Immaculate, a religious order of sisters who dedicate themselves to caring for the sick, elderly, and children. First starting in Mexico, the missionaries have spread across the globe, serving communities in Peru, Rome, and the United States, to name a few. Sister Beatriz, a missionary of charity located in Mexico, shared what Blessed Moises first told the sisters about their mission.
Y él nos decía a nosotras, hijas, yo a ustedes las quiero.
He told us, daughters, I want you to be contributors to humanity, that you may be like the Good Samaritan, right? The only requirement to do good is need.
The Missionaries of Charity of Mary Immaculate have been serving those in need since 1934, striving for spiritual childhood by serving society's most vulnerable in schools and hospitals. Blessed Moises Lira Serafin gained a pro-life legacy after a miracle was reported by a pregnant mother of a child with a rare fetal abnormality in 2004. The doctors recommended aborting the baby, but the mother chose not to and prayed to Blessed Moises for 9 days for her pregnancy. By her next doctor's appointment, the doctors discovered her baby had been miraculously healed.
I think this is a very strong message from God attributed to his intercession. Maybe those mothers who have a problem during their pregnancies can confide in him.
His postulator, a priest of the same order Blessed Moises belonged to, encourages pregnant mothers to invoke his intercession for protection of the unborn.
Un aplauso al nuevo beato.
A round of applause for the new blessed.
The beatification of Father Serafin brought cheers in Mexico, which were echoed by Pope Francis at the general audience the next day. Blessed Moises Lira Serafin, pray for us. That does it for this edition of EWTN Pro-Life Weekly. Remember to sign up for our newsletter, The Pro-Life Pulse, ewtn.com/pro-life. Remember, life is a gift. Your life is a gift. God bless.